Welcome to Hetaireia Hellenis Greek Club. We are reading through Matthew's Gospel. And I think maybe this will be the last meeting for the summer. Next week classes are out and students generally get that look, you know. And then I'll be gone for a couple of weeks and then we'll have the August break. So, but I plan to pick up again when classes start, and so we'll just watch the daily announcements. And for those who might be listening on the web, we'll take a break and then resume again in September. So we are in Matthew chapter 2, and picking up at verse 16. And many thanks to Dr. Jeff Oswald who led the way last week. So we're still in the midst of the account of Herod and the Magi and the child Jesus, so forth. So reading verse 16. Tata he rhodes idon hati enapaichthe hippaton magon et thimothe li'an kai apostelas an elen pantas tus paidas tus en Bethlehem kai en pase tois haritois autes apa dietus kai ta totero katatan kranan han e kribosen paraton magon. In the narrative, the angel has warned Joseph, of course, to take the child and his mother to Egypt, which he did. And now Matthew writes, then Herod, now we have a participle, the main verb of the clause is on Aelin in the second line. That's an aorist. We'll come to that in a second. And so given the fact that the aorist is a past indicative, idon should probably be translated as a pluperfect. So since you adjust the time one step back with the aorist stem participle. So perhaps something like, then Herod, when he had seen that... Now, en epaichthe is from em paizo. It means to mock or ridicule or deceive. And you can spot the theta eta ending. So it's an aorist indicative passive that he had been deceived or mocked by the magi. Oops, I actually misspoke. The main verb of this clause is ethimothe. It's from thimao. The verb actually means to anger someone. It's a transitive verb. So the passive can mean to be angered, or it could just mean get angry. And that's probably the sense that we have here. So the aorist indicative passive has an intransitive active meaning. He got angry. And leon is an adverb that means really. So he got really angry. And... now, another participle followed by a past time indicative. So probably take this apostelos, which is the aorist participle from apostello, as a so-called attendant circumstance or bang-bang or piggyback, whatever nomenclature you want to use. So he sent and literally took away. This form you have to look up. It's from onaireo. So the principal parts are very strong. There's no way you could guess this one. But it's the aorist indicative active third singular with a movable nu. And it's an idiom. It means to kill or destroy. So he took them away. He destroyed, and now the direct object, all of the children. Now let's modify children. Those in Bethlehem and in all the borders of it. Literally, a harion is a border or a boundary. And now Matthew very sort of nicely tells us, kind of weaves the story together. Remember that the Magi ascertained when the star appeared, right? So the star, we kind of deduce, must have appeared about 2 years before this time. So Matthew writes that he took away the children from 2 years and lower. Now, katotero is a word that might just give you a headache, but if you just breathe deep, it's from kato, and it's a comparative form. So you might remember the comparative endings go teros, tero, teron. Anyway, it just means from 2 years and lower. And then Matthew continues, according to the time which he, Herod, akribaod, he had ascertained, he had inquired carefully. So another just an aorist indicative from the Magi. So a kind of a compound sentence that describes the what is traditionally called the slaughter of the holy innocents. Grammatically, not too bad, just a couple of participles. Questions about the Greek of verse 16? Any questions at all? Okay, all right. Moving forward, we get now Matthew's the second or the third time that Matthew introduces an Old Testament citation. This time with a little bit of a different twist, though. Verse 17 and 18 together. Tata epleirothe ta hrethen dia ieremiu tu prophetu legantas phone en hrama ekuste klauthmas kai adirmas polus racheo klai uza ta tekna otes kai uk ethelen para klethenai hati uk ezen. Who remembers what particle typically introduces a Matthean formula citation? Not tata, but anybody? Henna.
Yeah.
In order that. Okay. Something happened in order to fulfill. There are 10 of these in Matthew, and twice he does not say henna in order that. Twice he says then. And most people think it's deliberate. That Matthew holds back from saying that the slaughter of the holy innocents was God's purpose. It happened, and God worked it into his plan, but he doesn't say it happened in order that. He just simply says, then, was fulfilled. And that's why the verb epleirothe is not a subjunctive verb, which is what you'd expect in a purpose clause, but it's just an aorist indicative passive. So then something was fulfilled. What? The subject is, again, the participle ta hrethen. Now again, just to make everybody feel bad, what's this from? What's hrethen from? Dictionary form. It's from Lego. Another very strong principal part. So the having been spoken thing was fulfilled. And it's the having been spoken through Jeremiah the prophet as he says, or when he says. And then we get the citation. There's no need to go into it, but this, you know, when Matthew cites the Old Testament, sometimes he seems to agree very closely with the Septuagint, sometimes the Masoretic tradition, sometimes those two agree and Matthew is a little different. You know, it's kind of a detailed study, but again, we don't need to go into that here. So he cites Jeremiah chapter 31, which I believe in the Septuagint is Jeremiah chapter 38, because the Septuagint and the Masoretic tradition are really quite different in Jeremiah. So pray for Dean Wenthe. He's writing that commentary. Subject, a voice in Ramah Ekuste, from Akuo, right? See the theta eta, so was heard. And now let's describe the voice. So we have nouns in apposition to voice. They're all nominative, right? So klauthmas, weeping, and mourning, big, much. Weeping and great mourning. Still in the nominative now. The voice, comma, weeping, comma, Rachel, and now a participle, which we can take in attributive position. Rachel, who was weeping or mourning, and now the direct object, the children of her, and uk athelen. She was not willing, paraklethenai, from parakaleo, to be comforted. and then Matthew, well, first Jeremiah, and then Matthew tells us why. Because they are not, that is, the children are gone. Morphologically, there's a little bit of a funny thing on this verb athelen towards the end of the citation. We learn this verb as what from the dictionary? I wish, I want. It's the verb thello, right? Well, if the verb is thello, you'd expect the temporal augment to be an epsilon, right? But actually, the older form of the verb is athello. And that explains why the augment is an eta. It's kind of a vestigial, you know, kind of an appendix, and a morphological appendix. But you typically see the imperfect athello with an eta and not an epsilon. So athelon is just the imperfect of athello. And Matthew then acknowledges that God, you know, works this terrible tragedy according to his purpose, but he seems to refrain from saying that it happened in order to. And if you want to delve a little more deeply into the relationship between human evil and the divine will, read the Formula of Concord. That means we're not going to talk about it now. Yeah. So. Any Greek questions on 17 or 18? Again, we've got the Book of Concord right here. Amen. Yes, Carl.
As a general kind of aside, I find this perhaps even more disturbing reading it in the Greek than in some translations, because some translations I found, or paraphrases, would like to maybe make this less of a tragedy than what it really is.
Right, right. Yeah, historically, it's probably maybe a dozen or 20 children.
Yeah.
You know, Bethlehem is not a big place. And, you know, for instance, our great friend Paul Meyer, the historian, you know, can fill us in on how this is perfectly typical of Herod, right, who ends up murdering a number of his own family members.
Yeah. So.
Now, is Ramah another word for Bethlehem?
We actually have an Old Testament specialist here. Reed, you want to say something about Ramah? I don't know.
This would be the launching point for the exiles going to Babylon.
Yeah, it's actually on the eastern. Is it by the Jordan?
Sure, north of Jerusalem,
right,
toward the Jordan River.
So they're actually on their way out of the land,
right,
when they're at Ramah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's not Bethlehem, it's to the east and heading into exile.
So the voice heard in Rome, I was just trying to tie that into Bethlehem.
Right, right. So, the good thing about Greek club is you don't actually have to know anything except vocabulary, principal parts, and divinely appointed matters like that.
Which is just about everything.
Which is great, that's right. So, okay, good. Pressing on to verse 19 then.
Yeah.
I love Greek club. Matthew starts with a genitive absolute the way he likes to. He really likes to start paragraphs with a genitive absolute. So, verse 19. Teleutesantas de tu herodu idu angelos kiriu finitai kat anar to Yosef en aegypto ... The participle is from teleutao, and alpha lengthens to eta, and you add sigma to get the weak aorist stem. So it's an aorist participle active, masculine singular genitive. And the genitive noun Herod is the reference, and so you have a genitive absolute. Most of the time in Matthew, these have a temporal force, and it works well. After Herod completed, and teleutao is an idiom for to die. Right? So, after Herod had died, idu, look, an angel of the Lord, presumably the same one. Now, finitai is it's a historical present. It's just a present indicative passive. But since this is past time narrative, we translate in the past sense. And the passive of phino can mean be manifested, or just appear. And that's what we've got going on here. So, appeared in a dream, according to a dream, to Joseph in Egypt. And then the next verse picks up. And so that's fairly straightforward. Matthew is a little sparing in his use of the historical present. So when it shows up, it's a little unusual, although I don't want to make too much of it. So, questions about verse 19? Like, what's that letter? Or anything at all? Good. We're all holding together well in the middle of summer. Good. And then verse 20, continue on. Legon, the angel speaking now. Egerthes, paralaba ta paidean, kai tain metera autu, kai poriu'u es gain Israel. Tethnekazen gar, hoi zetuntas tain psukein tu paideu. So we have the angel appeared saying, and was saying. Now we have... this angel likes to say, get up and do something. That's what he said before. And so we have, this is egerthesis. That anybody want to parse that for me? We've seen it before. It's from egero, and it's a participle. Anybody?
Singular nominative.
Aorist, passive, masculine, singular, nominative. Right. And again, remember that egero in the passive can mean be raised or just get up, right? You could translate after you have gotten up, but that's working a little too hard because Joseph can't take Mary and the child, and I mean, he can't take him while he's laying down. So it's just one of these attendant circumstances. Get up, take. And paralabe is from paralambano. Aorist, imperative, active, second singular. Notice how it's interesting. In Matthew's narrative, Joseph is the key player. In Luke's narrative, Mary is the key player. Mary isn't even named in chapter 2. It's just the child and his mother. The child and his mother. The child and his mother. So get up, take the child and the mother of him, and pour you u. Is from anybody? The dictionary form?
For you, O my,
deponent verb, and this is actually a present imperative middle, second singular. Okay. Yeah, it's actually second singular. You might want to point and click on this one. Yeah, it's present imperative middle. The second singular imperative endings are the evil ones. So. They vary quite a bit. So it's just go. Go into the land. We could take Israel as either accusative, in which case to the land, comma, Israel, or maybe it's just a genitive. Because like a lot of proper names, Israel doesn't decline. It doesn't change its endings. So you could translate the land of Israel.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And then the angel tells Joseph, who's probably wondering why he wants him to do that. Or why he can do that. We have a gar clause explaining. Remember that gar is always postpositive, so it's never the first element in its clause. That's why it's after the tethnekazin. Anybody want to venture a guess as to the dictionary form of tethnekazin? It's actually from apothnesko, which means to die, or colloquially to croak.
Yeah,
and you can spot the duplication on the front. The duplication with when the first consonant is a theta, you duplicate with the non-aspirated corresponding consonant, which in this case is a tau. And I can't believe I actually said the phrase non-aspirated corresponding consonant.
That's like super
colorful. I haven't had any beer today, so we're doing good.
Do we have to know what that is?
No. Well, for tomorrow. Yeah, for tomorrow. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Maybe worry about it in mid-August. So this is actually a perfect indicative, active, third plural. Have died.
Why does the apa drop off?
It's due to the historical development of the Greek language. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's apothnesko. And then let's see. Oh, does anybody know the second principal part? If Ben knows this, I'm going to slug him.
Apothanumai.
It's apothanumai. Yeah.
Slug him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then what is the aorist?
Op-ethanon.
Yeah, this one's this baby's really strong. So, yeah. That's right. The strong principal parts are strong enough to change, right? So, make a change. Now, the subject is the participle hoidzeitountes. This is from, obviously, zeiteo. So, the seeking ones. And Matthew tells what they were seeking. Those seeking the psuche. Here's a good example of what is normally the case. Psuche doesn't mean soul. It means life.
Life.
Right? See. So those who were seeking the life of the child have died. And they're in an ongoing dead state.
Yeah. And they're still dead. Sha'ol.
Yeah,
Kurt. Any reason why he would move from a singular Herod to this plural idea here?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he just said Herod died.
Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
Those that are seeking life are dead, basically. Uh-huh. Well, but only one guy died.
You know, that's a good question, Kurt. One possibility, if you look in the margin, you've got Exodus 4:19. This is actually a phrase out of the narrative of Moses. See?
Yeah.
And although I think the point is overdrawn, it's actually the strongest single piece of evidence that Matthew is thinking of that narrative as he tells this one. So that might be just a stylistic thing.
Not strong enough to put it in quotes, so to speak.
Exactly.
Quotation.
Exactly. Right. So, and this is what, isn't this what God tells Moses? In Midian, those who are seeking your life have died. So that may be, that may explain the plural. Yeah, right. So
interesting, because
I keep looking at Reed over here. So
yeah, that's exactly what.
That's what I thought it was. Yeah, Carl.
Couple things. Well, Moses.
No, you only get one.
Kind of a prefigurement of, well, an Old Testament kind of a Christ-like figure anyway.
Yes, and but that's so theology, and we're not going to do that now.
Oh, okay. And then also, for Kurt's plural thing, didn't Herod have his own advisors as well as when the Magi came?
It could just be Herod and the boys.
Well, maybe not, but the Magi weren't seeking his life. I'm thinking Herod and his advisors.
Okay, Kurt and Carl will work up a little five-page paper on that.
There you go.
On the shift to the plural hoidzeitountes, right?
Yeah. That's good.
Okay, great. Okay, verse 21. Again, Matthew kind of, it's part of his style. He doesn't mind repeating himself. You know, the angel says, get up and take. Then he writes, he got up and took, right? So, verse 21. Ha de eger thes par elaben ta paideon, kai tain metera autu, kai ace eilthen, ace gain Israel. It's very repetitive. We've got the subject switch at the beginning. Remember that the article in Greek, in older Greek, is actually a pronoun. And this is a vestige of that usage. When you've got article, especially de, you're changing the subject of the prior clause. So you translate, and he. And then the referent of the participle and the subject of the verb, in a sense, is that little pronoun, that little article, he. So once again, another bang-bang participle. He got up and took the child and the mother of him, and he entered from Ace Erchemai into the land of Israel. So Joseph is, you know, without doing theology here, Joseph is really portrayed as, in the first place, clueless. But once God reveals to him what the plan is, then Joseph responds, you know, in obedience. So Joseph is really clearly a pious believer. But it's of some importance that he doesn't figure this out on his own. God has to reveal it to him, which is obviously of great theological importance, but that's theology. So we're not going to go into that. So, anything on verse 21? Anything at all on forms or Greek? It's fairly straightforward narrative. Again, remember that Greek is hypotactic. It likes to have one main verb, one participle, two participles, three participles, two dependent clauses. This is fairly simple, at least compared to some things. So, and it reads fairly straightforwardly. So, okay, good. Verse 22. Akousas de,
Hati archelaos baseluae tes Judaios ante tu patras autu Herodu ephobethe eke ap elthane crematis thes de kat onar an ekorisen eis tamere tes Galileas. Now we start with a participle and the stuff that goes with it. In order to translate it, you want to track until you get to the main verb, which is ephobethe. He feared. Okay? Again, and yet one more, isn't that interesting? One more aorist passive form that has an active voice in transitive meaning. See, phobeo, the active voice of phobeo means to frighten someone.
Yeah.
But again, track with me in your head. The passive of frighten is to be frightened, and then it's one shift from there to simply be afraid. And that's the meaning that you most often see for phobeomai in the New Testament. So, since that's an aorist indicative, we'll take akousos at the very beginning, since it's an aorist participle, as a pluperfect. And when he had heard that Archelaus. Now we have a present indicative. Hold on your hats. In indirect discourse. But akousos has a past time sense derived from the main verb. So we translate baseluē not as is ruling, but was ruling. And when he had heard that Archelaus was ruling, Basileo takes a genitive object, was ruling Judea. Now we have a nice example of ante plus the genitive, which means in the place of, instead of. You know, this theologically, this can be very important. The Son of Man came not to serve, but to be served, and to give his life as a ransom in the place of the many. See? It's not just for or on behalf of, but actually in place of. And you actually see that here. Herod isn't there anymore. Archelaus is ruling in the place of his father, comma, Herod. So when Joseph heard that, now you finally get to the main verb, he was afraid there to depart. He didn't want to go to Judea. Remember that Herod the Great rules the entire region. Once he dies, then the Romans break it up into pieces, right? And that's when you get, well, actually, it's a kind of a complicated story, but Archelaus is in charge of Judea for about a dozen years. So because he was afraid to depart there, and now we get the next clause. We've seen krematizo before when the magi are warned in a revelation. Okay. So, and because he was warned, we'll take that as a causal participle. It's aorist participle passive. Again, masculine singular nominative. Because he was warned according to a dream, an echo resen, an echo reo, he departed into the parts of Galilee. And then we'll go ahead and finish off the chapter, verse 23. Kai elthon kat oikesen eis polen legamenen Nazaret. Papos plerothe tarethen diaton propheton hati Nazorias klethesetai. So we're continuing Joseph's travels here. He's the subject. And he went and dwelt. From kat oi keo, aorist indicative active, third singular, dwelt into a city which was being called Nazareth. And now we get, yet this is in some ways the most puzzling of Matthew's Old Testament citations. Hupos plus the subjunctive, purpose, in order that it might be fulfilled. What? The having been spoken through the prophets, plural, might be fulfilled.
that he will be called a Nazarene. And see the commentaries for the lengthy discussion about what Matthew is actually referring to here. Because there isn't an Old Testament prophecy that says the Messiah will be called a Nazarene. So,
is it in the certain blue cover?
See a recently published large blue book for at least one somewhat informed opinion. But don't go to the bank with that one. Unless you have, like, cash with you.
Yeah. A direct deposit.
Okay. Now notice, we'll stop here, but notice, now this is really interesting because I think it's of some narrative and theological significance. We all know that 30 years now passes, right? But just pretend there's no chapter and verse divisions. Okay? Verse 23 ends, and he dwelt in a city which is called Nazareth in order that the things spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled, that he will be called a Nazarene. Now in those days, John the Baptist appears. See? The narrative is just seamless. So theologically, there's no significance of the passage of 30 years to Matthew's narrative. What's going on in Jesus' infancy is the same kind of thing that's going on with John the Baptist's ministry. Namely, the scripture is being fulfilled. That's the continuity. It doesn't matter that 30 years have passed.
Almost speaks to the timelessness of Christ.
It speaks to the fulfillment. St. Paul's phrase, the fullness of
the
time.
The fullness of time.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. So. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. We will re-adjourn Greek Club in September. But don't let that keep you from reading Greek in the month of August.